Calvin's Zoo for this show. We're going to have great speakers. We're going to have a legal background and overview of what's happening, as well as stories from potential DAPA recipient, how different organizations across the country are participating in this, and then the launching of a toolkit for how others can take those as well. Can you all still hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Great, perfect.
Yeah.
And ways that folks across the country can use this toolkit for participating in vigils and events as well. At the end, we're going to have time for people to ask their own questions. And as you just heard, we muted folks so that we could cut down on background noise. But if questions do arise while the speakers are presenting, you can feel free to type them into the chat box, and we'll reserve them for the Q&A session at the end. And then during the Q&A session, we'll also have an opportunity for you to unmute yourselves in order to ask a question over the phone. So without further ado, I'm going to launch right into DACA DAPA protections, the Supreme Court, and beyond with our first speaker. Ashley Feasley is the Director of Advocacy at the Catholic Legal Immigration Network, and she will begin by giving an overview of DACA DAPA and how we got to where we are today and what is happening at the Supreme Court level. So go ahead, Ashley.
Hi, and thank you so much for attending this webinar and for inviting me to participate on what is such an important and timely topic. So the general overview was given last Monday on the 18th. The U.S. Supreme Court heard the U.S. v. Texas case. And so we're going to start by talking a little bit about what is at stake for U.S. v. Texas and why was this so important. So U.S. v. Texas is a case challenging President Obama's immigration actions, which were initiated in November of 2014. The executive actions that the president initiated included a variety of changes to the immigration system, but the most notable and the most reported on were the DACA and DAPA. Now, DAPA, again, the Deferred Action for Parents of Americans and Lawful Permanent Residents, and DACA, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, were two, basically, of the signature pieces of a very big package of immigration changes and reforms. This action, U.S. v. Texas, basically will decide about whether President Obama can move forward with implementation of DACA and DAPA. And so when we're talking about DACA and DAPA, we're going to hear later on in the webinar an individual who is personally affected, which I think gives a really good dimension to this. So I'm going to quickly just give a little bit of an overview as to what exactly is at stake when we talk about DACA and DAPA writ large. So by estimates, DACA and DAPA would affect approximately 3.7 to 4.5 million individuals living in the United States. These are, you know, individuals who would be able to come forward and receive basically not legal status, but reprieve from deportation in a process known as deferred action. This process would also enable these individuals who came forward to receive work authorization. So they would be allowed to remain here legally during the term of their deferred action and have the ability to work legally and openly in American businesses. So it's a really big, I think, population of who would be affected by this particular court case. It's important to understand that there are other pieces of the executive action, but U.S. v. Texas really focused in on DACA and DAPA. In addition to the very important decision affecting 3.7 to 4.5 million individuals, this case, for some people who watch the Supreme Court and also who look at the dimensions of executive power, argue that this case could have really large ramifications for future executives, so future presidents' ability to kind of use their prosecutorial discretion, particularly as it relates to immigration law. So prosecutorial discretion is basically the authority of a law enforcement agency, or in this case the president, because he's the head of the Department of Homeland Security, to enforce a law or decide whether or to what degree to enforce the law. And it's a tool that many presidents before have used, and this, you know, could possibly affect future uses. So if we could go to the next slide, that's just a general, I think, overview of what's at stake. So it's really important to see how exactly did we get here. So I mentioned that November 2014 is when President Obama initiated his executive action plan, which had a series of different things. And so in February of 2015, 26 states, they had initiated a lawsuit, and they filed this case in the district court, the Southern District of Texas, with Judge Andrew Hannon. And in February, Judge Hannon granted what's known as a preliminary injunction. And this means that he temporarily blocked the implementation of the expanded DACA and DAPA initiatives and prohibited the government from taking any further steps to implement these initiatives. So what's important about that timing is the government had laid out its plan for implementation both of expanded DACA and DAPA, and the government was 2 days away from implementing expanded DACA and was further out from expanding DAPA, but certainly had been in the process of you know, working to implement. So as I mentioned, the Department of Justice, on behalf of President Obama, appealed the decision. And in November 9th, 2015, by a 2-to-1 vote, the Fifth Circuit, which is the next highest, the Court of Appeals for the Southern District of Texas, they upheld the district court's order granting the preliminary injunction. The majority basically accepted that the district court found that Texas had standing to move forward with its case. And so from there, there was a lot of concern about how quickly could the government turn around their request, if they decided to appeal to the Supreme Court and file what is procedurally known as a petition for certiorari. And so the government actually indeed was able to very quickly turn around their petition within a couple days of having received the Fifth Circuit's affirmance of the lower district court. And they moved forward and formally petitioned then. In January of 2016, we learned that the Supreme Court granted against certiorari. So they said, we're taking this case. We see that it has issues of law that we do want to address. And they scheduled the oral argument for last Monday, April 18th. And we're going to expect likely a decision in late June of 2016. Why is it that we're going to receive a decision so far along from when the oral argument was held? Well, normally the Supreme Court takes rolling oral arguments. They then will kind of conference those oral arguments that they have taken, basically the week of the oral argument. So this past Friday, the justices and their clerks met to discuss this case. But then comes the time period of kind of drafting the opinion and working on it. And traditionally, the most high-profile cases normally come out in that last week of June. So that's where we kind of are in terms of the procedural issues for this case. We could go to the next slide. So the issues that basically are going to be addressed by the Supreme Court, and these were kind of the legal issues that were considered, is one, do any of the states have standing or legal capacity to bring the suit? Two, does expanded DACA and DAPA violate federal law? Three, did the federal government comply with proper procedures when it announced expanded DACA and DAPA? And four, do expanded DACA and DAPA violate the Constitution? So I think one of the key things to talk about in terms of when we look at how Supreme Court justices sometimes dispense with cases like these, so large cases that have largely political issues at hand as well as some issues of law, is frequently justices like to dispense with these cases on procedural issues rather than address the issue of more substantive law if it's seen as something political. So, and what does that mean? It means that the justices are kind of, if they have the opportunity to dispense this case by looking at a procedural issue, they might. And what would the procedural issue here be most viable? That would be standing. So many of you, I'm sure, either were in the room when you heard this or you read articles, but there was quite a bit of discussion about standing and what exactly standing meant in this case. So standing basically is when you bring a lawsuit, the person or the entity who's claiming, so this instance would be the Texas and the 25 other states, have to have a stake in the outcome of the case. And it really is about kind of proving that you are going to be affected and that it's not, you're not utilizing the court and the court's resources for a larger political gesture. So I think, you know, there were a lot of comments about the discussion about standing and some of the issues, but that's certainly something that's going to be on the justices' mind. Another thing that came up was the issue about, you know, the authority to do so and whether notice, proper notice was given. This was an argument that the lower court gave about whether the administration followed up an important Administrative Procedure Act, you know, all of the filing, which is basically an articulation that the government must give due comment to large changes in the law. And this, again, is an element of interpretation. So these are the four issues that were basically discussed, you know, kind of highlighted as the issues. But obviously some were, I think, more, you know, noted in the comments by the justices than others. We can move to the next slide. So I think, you know, we've talked a little bit about what was discussed and how did we get here and who on the macro level, you know, who, what really is going to be, you know, stands to be affected by this. But it's really important as we talk about this to think about what are the potential outcomes here as we look into June and thereafter. One is that the court dismisses the case for lack of standing. So regardless of whether you think DACA or DAPA violates the law, the Supreme Court could dismiss the case outright because the plaintiff states lack standing or a legal stake in the case. Kind of what I mentioned before. If the court dismisses for the lack of standing, the entire case will come to an end and the injunction will be lifted. The federal government could then set up a system for accepting and processing the applications for expanded DACA and DAPA. And as I mentioned before, since the government was so close in, you know, February of 2015, the Obama administration may, if they choose to, begin processing those applications, particularly for expanded DACA, quite quickly. I think people will wait to see on that. So that's option one, right? So option two is that the court reverses the Fifth Circuit on a critical legal issue and allowing the initiatives to move forward. So, for example, the Supreme Court could rule that the plaintiff states the administrative procedure claims that I mentioned about filing notice, that they're not likely to succeed, that it wasn't a really meritorious claim. And so by reversing the Fifth Circuit, the court could clear the way for expanded DACA and DAPA to move forward, permitting the government to implement the initiatives if it chooses to do so. However, this would not be the end of the lawsuit. The district court would go on to decide if the president's initiatives were constitutional, and the decision of the district court could eventually be appealed, meaning the case could go on to the Fifth Circuit and the Supreme Court a second time. So this is kind of the, like, slow-moving hand of justice a little bit. You know, we're not certain how quickly that would proceed, but likely it wouldn't happen, I think, through this administration. So the last possible outcome is that the court affirms the Fifth Circuit decision, which would uphold the preliminary injunction. This means that the Supreme Court would agree with the previous court rulings and does not allow expanded DACA or DAPA to move forward. With a preliminary injunction in place, the case would go back to the district court, and the federal government would not be permitted to implement the expanded DACA or DAPA while the case continued before the district court. again, this case could go back up to the Supreme Court again like this, but it's one of these slow-moving situations where we're kind of up against a ticking clock in terms of the end of the Obama administration and uncertainty about the presidential election and who will be the next president. So I have one more slide. You know, I've laid out a little bit of the case as to what, you know, what we can expect. But I think a really important thing to talk about now, and we're going to hear more about this from the other speakers, is what can we do in the meanwhile? We know that we likely have to wait until the last week of June. We know that there's a possibility that we will get the, you know, authority to move forward and the government can attempt to implement DACA and DAPA. The court might also decide against that. So one of the things I think is most important is to prepare communities for the possibility of a positive decision. In addition to spreading hope and you know, I think good, you know, vibes about the future, it's really important that we double down and kind of look at what is implementation going to look like. DACA and DAPA both have quite a few, you know, documentation requirements that are, you know, somewhat extensive. And we really have to start promoting the ability to collect those documents. The other thing is the application cost. This is not a program that the government has indicated that they would be willing to do any sort of fee waiver for. So every individual will be on the hook for the $465. The last part is education. Obviously, there's a lot of excitement, but there's also, I think, a need to inform people about what their requirements are going to be to comply. The next thing is, I'll think a little bit more about what we can do in the face of the possibility that we might not get executive action and how do we stay positive. You know, DACA and DAPA, while a large piece of the administrative action, are just a piece. There are several pieces that really have made an impact on people's lives, such as the expansion of provisional waiver for unlawful presence. These are things that people can continue to apply for, and also some pretty good integration measures. And it's important to encourage people to go and get screened, whether by an attorney or a BIA representative, to see if maybe they have another form of relief. The Center for Migration Studies and National Council of La Raza created a report that basically said that 14% of all the individuals who they had surveyed who had come in for screenings over the past 2 or 3 years were eligible for other forms of relief when they came in for an immigration legal service provider that they didn't even know about. So that's still a big population. The last two, I think, obviously, you know, the other speakers are going to talk about the issue of immigration reform as an election issue. But I think perhaps necessary to point and close on is the fact that there's going to be a lot of excitement and opportunity, but that's also going to be opportunity for exploiting individuals who don't know more about the actual nuts and bolts of the processes. You're going to see a lot of, you know, scrupulous actors and unscrupulous actors who are looking to target the immigrant community, whether through immigration scams or notario fraud. And so it's really important to keep that in mind as well. I'm around to answer questions, and I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you, Ashley, for giving that really wonderful state of play and update. So just a reminder, if folks do have questions as speakers are speaking, you can feel free to type that into the chat box, and we'll also have a time at the end when folks can unmute themselves. But our next speaker is going to be Arturo Hernandez-Garcia of the Metro Denver Sanctuary Coalition. Arturo is a potential recipient of DAPA, and should it go on to be implemented. And he's going to tell us a little bit about how this would affect him and his family. He'll also be joined by Reverend Noel Anderson, who's the National Grassroots Coordinator for Church World Service. And he will be supporting Arturo and also talking with Patricia Alonso from both the Indiana Undocumented Youth Alliance and the Center for Interfaith Cooperation about best practices for organizing in your own communities and raising awareness about this important issue. So without further ado, Arturo and Noel.
Yeah, thanks, Hannah. And I'll just want to start out by saying how important it is in the next month or two while we're waiting for this decision to lift up the stories of those who will benefit from DACA and DAPA. We know that the court We're not talking about elected officials when we talk about the Supreme Court justices, so we can't influence them the same way we would by making calls or writing letters. But what we can do is we can bring in the court of public opinion and help shift the public narrative to be more of a welcoming one that accepts immigrants no matter what their documentation status and understands that DACA and DAPA is the most important program for us right now to create relief from deportation. And so with that, you know, I'd like to ask Arturo, who was in sanctuary, first of all, these leaders who are willing to tell their stories are what really change hearts and minds. And leaders like Arturo, who stepped up into the sanctuary movement and went into sanctuary for, I think, 9 months it was with Arturo, and still did not get a stay of removal, but was given an unofficial word from ICE that he would not be deported. And so he and his family have been waiting for DAPA, and so he's going to share a little bit about he does have a citizen daughter and a DACA recipient daughter. He would definitely benefit from DAPA if it was to be put into effect. And Arturo is going to tell us a little story, his story and where he's at on this journey, and I'll help interpret a bit as I'm able. Arturo, ¿estás?
Hi, everybody. My name is Arturo Hernandez, and I'm calling to Denver, Colorado, and I lived in Santuario for 9 months to fight in my case for, I fight my case for immigration for 5 years. So, Pastor Noé, pues, yo peleé mi caso por 5 años y los abogados supuestamente no pudieron hacer nada cuando yo tenía un caso pues muy limpio, ¿no? Ya que pues yo nunca había tenido problemas o récord con la policía ni con inmigración.
So I've fought my case for 5 years trying to win a stay or trying to stop my deportation order, and you know, I don't have any record. I don't have any, you know, problems with the police.
Yo la de la manera que llegué a Santuario aquí en Denver, después de muchos años que no se había implementado Santuario, yo fui una de las primeras personas, o he sido la primera porque hasta ahorita no nadie más está en Santuario. Yo tenía solo 3 semanas para mi orden final cuando yo conocí a unas personas de CIRC, que son una coalición para derechos de los inmigrantes, y después conocí a Jennifer Piper de AFC.
So I was looking for help to stop my deportation order, and the lawyer said it would be very difficult. And I met the Colorado Immigrant Rights Coalition, and then later I met Jennifer Piper from the American Friends Service Committee.
Y bueno, Santuario pues me ayudó a continuar aquí unido junto con mi familia, ¿no? De que no fuéramos separados. Yo tengo 2 hijas, tengo 17 años de casados, ya casi 18 años, porque ya vamos a cumplir casi 17 años viviendo aquí en Colorado.
So I was able to, the sanctuary, entering into sanctuary helped me stop, make sure that I would not be separated from my family. And so I'm very thankful for that. And I've been living in Denver and almost married for about 18 years. And he was also the first one in sanctuary in Denver.
Estamos esperando la resolución, ¿verdad?, de DACA y DAPA. El DACA porque pues mi hija mayor va a cumplir 17 años, pero ella la trajimos cuando ella tenía solo 3-4 meses, y entonces ella no conoce otro país nomás que este, ¿no? Y pues me gustaría que implementaran algo más amplio para ella, ¿no? Poder ella tener un estatus legal más permanente algún día.
So we're very much looking forward to the potential that DAPA and DACA bring. As a father of my daughter, who is turning 18, you know, she will be applicable for DACA. She already has DACA, but we really want an expanded version for her. So this is very important to us.
Y bueno, y esperando el DAPA igualmente, pues mi esposa y yo seríamos elegibles, creo que parece que calificaríamos, ¿no?, para el DAPA si esto se implementara, que esperamos primero Dios que sí. Y bueno, no, pues yo estoy muy agradecido con todos los grupos y con toda la gente que sigue peleando y luchando para los derechos, ¿no?, como de no separar más familias a nivel nacional aquí en Estados Unidos y continuar luchando y poner un granito de arena para ayudar a los demás también.
So me and my wife are also very much looking towards DAPA to provide relief for us. Although we've been assured that ICE won't deport us, there's nothing. You know, there's still concern, there's still fear, and we want to, you know that we can all be together as family. And I'm very thankful to all the groups that have been involved with the sanctuary movement and have supported my case. And I'm very glad to be speaking with you all here today. Bueno, muchas gracias, Arturo, por estar con nosotros. Dios te bendiga en todo lo que y todos nosotros estamos orando que vamos a ganar DAPA y DACA ya pronto. Thank you so much, Arturo, for being with us, and we all be praying that we can see DACA and DAPA put into implementation.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you for all the support to me and gracias y esperemos a tener resoluciones pronto y pues gracias a todos.
Gracias, Arturo. So you can go now to the next slide where I just want to talk a little bit about, I said that, you know, we want to be lifting up the stories, and one of the ways in which we're going to be lifting up the stories is also through these events, actions, vigils. We want to be shaping the public narrative. We want to be bringing in, you know, social media and media, and Megan will be talking more about that. But having these events is a big part of that process. So, you know, working, of course, with groups who are impacted, immigrants' rights coalitions, day labor centers, those who will benefit from DAPA and DACA, and, you know, working towards also, you know, we hope at some point some sort of common sense immigration reform. And right now, this is what's in the spotlight. And so everything we are doing around DACA and DAPA is going to be lifted up more. And so that helps us engage more people, mobilize more people, and it helps change people's minds or bring people in on this issue on and hopefully taps into their compassion and why we are doing this as faith communities. Next slide, please. So here you see a picture that and from the Fifth Circuit Court where that was in New Orleans of a vigil. Next slide, please. So, you know, we want to come together around common goals and identify, you know, what do we hope to do? You know, how do we hope to mobilize people through these events? What kind of speakers would be best? Make sure that we're inviting, you know, multi-faith leaders from different traditions, as well as making sure that those impacted groups are involved in the planning. Next slide. And we really do want to draw on our different religious traditions. I mean, if you do invite faith leaders, it's great if they can wear collars or stoles or robes. You know, think of symbolic ways you can bring in the traditions, whether it's a foot washing or a Seder dinner or a prayer wall. And again, always want to lift up those stories, and we always want to push out those photos, those visuals, make sure that the media gets the quotes from the faith leaders themselves. Next slide. And I think you all do know how to organize these events, and if you want to learn more, maybe you haven't done one before, the toolkit, I think, is more in-depth. I'm sort of just laying out a general framework, and then I think it's much better always, right, to hear from somebody who's in the field, who's on the ground, doing the local organizing work. And so we're lucky that the Center of the Cooperation, Center for Interfaith Cooperation in Indiana, was willing to share about the work they're doing, that they've been working with the Undocumented Youth Alliance. And so Patricia Alonso Ferran is with us today, and she's going to tell us a little bit, because she really was the one who took initiative on this, which is great. We love to see this type of collaboration and cooperation happening, and they're doing a series of events, a docu-challenge events. And so I'm going to let her go ahead and talk more about these events. Patricia, are you with us?
Hello, yes, thank you. So, again, thank you for the invitation. Can everyone hear me?
Yep.
Yep, we can hear you.
Okay, perfect. So the Indiana Undocumented Youth Alliance, we are actually a youth-led community organization in Indiana, and we seek to empower young immigrants to achieve higher education, and we also want to demand more just and humane local and state and federal policies that affect our undocumented communities. So it was very wonderful when we were able to collaborate with the Center for Interfaith Cooperation. I was actually an AmeriCorps member for 2 years, and I met Charlie, the director there, and I had the opportunity to see that at that building they had different art shows. So whenever we had the idea of an art gallery for us, we thought that the Center for Interfaith Cooperation would be a wonderful space. And one of our main goals is to, again, empower young immigrants to achieve higher education. And we do this through fundraising. That's one way. So in 2011, the Indiana State Legislature passed HB 1402 here in Indiana, which basically prohibited in-state tuition for our undocumented students. And so, again, this just made it very difficult for many undocumented youth to continue their education. And then I forgot what year it was, I believe the 2012, HB 207, basically grandfathered undocumented students who had already been enrolled in Indiana College before, I believe, July 2011. So with the art gallery, what we hope to do is, again, empower through art. There are many people who are still afraid to come out of the shadows, some of them because they're either introverted, others because it's just something that they're afraid about. And so we hope to use art to change the narrative that the media is portraying about the undocumented community. So our art gallery, our theme is called Undocu Challenges, and basically we define that as identity loss, family separation, employment exploitation, et cetera, political oppression. And then all the art pieces that will be for sale and the proceeds will support our scholarship, and we hope for next semester to provide 5 1,000 scholarships. And it was very amazing that they mentioned, the previous speakers mentioned, you know, the importance of spreading hope and organizing. So we've also collaborated with other organizations in Indiana, such as IndyCan and the Neighborhood Christian Legal Clinic, to do DACA clinics back in 2012. And so that's actually amazing that they mentioned that, and we hope to continue doing that and educating our communities and to support them in that way. And also just to mention, this wasn't in the slide, but this last week we had an Indiana, Chris Kobach and Dale Wilcox come to Indiana, and they are members of the Immigration Reform Law Institute and also the Federation of American Immigration Reform, which is believed to be like two anti-immigrant hate groups. And they actually had in Indiana the first Indiana State Select Committee on Immigration Issues. And so one of the ways that we organized for that was to have a press conference before where we had members of the Indiana Undocumented Youth Alliance as well as other supporters come in solidarity and just speak about how, you know, this was going to affect our community. So that's just another way that we've been organizing here in Indiana. And again, I thank you for allowing us to speak today.
Well, we thank you, Patricia, for being with us. And just one last thing to add on these events is it really is important, if there are vigils, you know, prayer services, art galleries, whatever it is, you know, we really want to track all these events. And so, you know, lift them all up to show the power of communities organizing for immigrants' rights and for DACA and DAPA. And so if you can be in touch with, you know, whoever you work with through the Interfaith Immigration Coalition, you can always email me. You have my email because I sent out this invite for the webinar. Please let us know what you're planning, and we can lift it up and lift it up to your senators, to your representatives, all of that good stuff. Thank you, everybody, and I know we got a couple good more speakers. So, Hannah?
Yeah, thank you, Arturo and Patricia and Noel, for reminding us of the people behind these, what can feel like really wonky legal things, but that there are families and communities and people who are needing to have their voices lifted up. And on that, we're going to have Megan Cagle, who is also from Church World Service, talking about how to amplify the message and impact from your vigil or community event.
I think we lost Hannah, but can everyone still hear me?
Yeah, we can.
Great. Thank you. So as Hannah said, I am a media associate with Church World Service. And as she was saying, I think she made a really good point. A lot of times when we hear about these kinds of Supreme Court cases or legal cases, they can be very wonky and hard for most people to really grasp what they mean in actual terms. And so one of the best ways to help break down some of the technical aspects of the cases is to share stories. They're our most powerful way to communicate, and they're the best way that we can connect with our audiences and the community as a whole to really bring home the importance of why we need to have this injunction lifted and have DACA and DAPA implemented in our communities. You'll see on the slide, if you're following along online, there's an image on the right-hand side. It shows a woman, and it's just a brief little blurb about Fight for Families. And I really want to lift up this resource as a way to kind of model your stories and some of what you're sharing about either your event or your own experiences and base it off of this model. The fightforfamilies.org website has a really amazing amount of resources available to show how you can help communicate your story or the story around your event in a really powerful and impactful way. If you use stories to help promote your event and draw attention to the importance of DACA and DAPA, we're able to really bring the human element of this case into the media, which is the most important thing. As I think we're all familiar with, there's been a lot of coverage in the last several days, immediately following the Supreme Court hearing last Monday. And many of them, and some of the stories that got the most traction, were because people stepped up and shared their stories. So thank you so much for everyone on the call today for sharing their stories. And I really encourage everyone who's on the call today and listening in to take the next step and to share their stories or to organize an event. Noel mentioned a lot of great resources that we can use to plan your own event or to join another event in your community. When you are planning your event and when you are looking to share your story, there's a couple of best practices that we always like to make sure you have in your toolbox that you can build with and really help make your event as successful as it possibly can be. And part of that is using both social media and traditional media when promoting your event. both of them are really helpful in reaching a wide array of audiences. Specifically, when you're planning an event, I'm sure we're all at least somewhat familiar with Twitter and Facebook. Make sure you set up an event. Make sure you have a hashtag that you use for your event. And you can even use some of the ones that are already ongoing and have a really big discussion around on social media. There's a couple of examples here on the slide. Fight for Families, DACA, and DAPA. These are all great ways to tie your event into the larger movement, but we always encourage folks to create their own hashtag and event hashtag when you're planning your overall community event. That way you can have something to track for your own records and that you can help folks share on their own as well. And then when we are welcoming refugees, immigrants, whomever into our communities, I think one of the best ways to do that is to invite members of the press to your event, whether it's someone who writes about immigration. There's been a lot of discussion on refugees in the media. If they've written about that in the past, invite them to your event. See if they're willing to cover the community event that you are hosting. You can also, if you decide not to host an event, but maybe have a vigil or a prayer service, write a letter to the editor or an opinion article that you can help boost what you've done and share the story, since those are our most powerful ways to connect to our audiences. And then also share your event images on social media. There's a lot of ways to connect with folks on social media, both traditional media reporters who may be on social media, and then also groups within the IIC. We're always looking to help lift up the stories from your community and make sure that your voice is heard. So feel free to tag us on social media. We keep an eye out on it, and we'd love to help lift up your voice in your event. I'm around for questions, and we're always here to help. I know that there's probably going to be some questions at the end, but if you do have questions on communication specifically, please feel free to reach out. Reach out to us at the IIC, and we're happy to help you.
Thanks, Megan. And just for a couple of minutes, we're also going to have Reverend Dr. Sharon Stanley Ray, Director of Refugee and Immigration Ministries for the Disciples of Christ, speak about a parallel initiative to continue welcoming refugees as well into our communities and lifting up their voices along with immigrants' voices through the National Refugees Welcome Campaign. And then after Sharon speaks, we will take questions. So, Sharon.
Great. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Great. Thanks, Hannah. Yeah, what an important time it is as we continue to work for immigrant rights and lift up the DACA-DAPA initiatives. And on the refugee side, as we know that we've encountered at least 49 state-level pieces of legislation, 35 at the national level that have been in opposition to refugees, we're so excited to announce that just last Thursday we had opportunity collectively as many partners to raise up the initiative called Refugees Welcome. So we just want to highlight it for you. We want to make sure that you are aware that if you go to the website, www.refugeesarewelcome.org, that you see listed on the screen, that you have an opportunity there to access a really full toolkit with a number of diverse resources that can give you forms that are already ready for you to use should you like to hold a refugee welcome dinner like the type you see on the slide on the right. There are social media images like the one on the top left, other hashtags, sample tweets, information about how to continue to lift up the stories and the voices of refugees. And the overall purpose of this campaign is really working to build friendships among diverse cultures and to strengthen both the public and the private sense of welcome for refugees, to bring legislators to your events as much as possible, to engage them in ways that we know can help really change their hearts. So we had a national launch call this past Thursday, and we already, maybe we'll go to the next slide, to show the number of endorsing organizations from multi-faith communities that we've already had. this is in so many ways just the start. We encourage you, if you don't happen to see your own faith community yet represented on this slide, contact them. In all likelihood, they are in the process of considering endorsement, and certainly encourage them to do so. We will have some particular emphasis because of amount of anti-refugee legislation we've seen in places like Kansas, Virginia, Texas, Florida, Nebraska, South Carolina. By all means, if you are in any of these states, please contact us at the email that was listed on the slide previously, which is info.refugeeswelcome@gmail.com. And we wanted to highlight as well that on May the 5th at 4 p.m. East Coast time, we invite all of you to join in to a call that will be highlighting the different components of this campaign. We'll help let you know how you can register your own events and multiply these events. We hope to have hundreds of them across the country building towards World Refugee Day on June the 20th, as well as following. So, Hannah, I will turn it back over to you. I know folks have lots of questions about DACA and DAPA, and if they have any related to Refugees Welcome, we're certainly happy to answer those as well.
Thanks, Sharon. So we do have two questions already that I think would be best answered by Ashley, probably. So one of them is, what happens with a 4-4 result for the Supreme Court? And then also, what does this do for folks that already have DACA? So if SCOTUS is split, what happens to applications in process? What happens to DACA holders who need to renew in July and August? And maybe this is a good time to talk about DACA versus DACA or expanded DACA.
Okay, great. Great questions. So a tie of 4-4, because we only have 8 justices now, would mean that the lower court rulings would stand, which would mean that the administration would be enjoined from implementing DACA or DAPA. The second question relating to, if you're in process now for DACA, how will the Supreme Court affect your decision? It won't, because that's a program that's not under attack. It's more the expanded DACA that has been the subject of the litigation. You should continue moving forward with DACA processing normally as you would. As it relates to the expansion, basically it has changed the age, and that's how it's being expanded. That so if you qualify for expanded DACA but you don't qualify for DACA, then you would not be able to receive a benefit if the Supreme Court rules 4-4.
Thanks, Ashley. So if there are any more questions, we have about 10 minutes left in our hour. Folks can continue to put it into the chat box, but you can also unmute yourself by pressing *6 on your phone keypad, and that will allow you to be heard by the rest of the group.
Hi, this is Susan Leslie at the EU. I have a question for Sharon.
Yes.
Sharon, I'd love to promote the webinar you mentioned on May 5th, and I went to the website you mentioned, and I'm not seeing it there. Am I missing it, or is it not posted there yet?
So there is posted now on the website, and I know Megan's on the call, and she did the posting, so she may want to chime in as well. But posted on the website now is the recording, the audio, and the visual portion from the webinar that was held last Thursday. And then we'll be sending out probably in the next day. We're in the process of getting speakers completely confirmed for the May 5th call, and then we'll send out an invitation for that in a similar way that we sent out for this webinar, so that you'll have opportunity to register for that one and to plug in. So stay tuned for the invite for that one. But in the meantime, if you want to access the last week's webinar, it's up on the website. Megan, you want to add anything?
Sure, thank you. And thank you so much for looking to help support the initiative. The initial recording and presentation are on the website, as Sharon mentioned. They're under the tab Welcoming Resources, and they should be towards the middle to the end on the link. Both the MP3 file of the recording is available, and then also the presentation is available as well.
Okay, that's great. And I do have other questions. I won't take up time here. So how do I write to you, Megan?
Sure. You can write to me directly at mcagle, and my last name is spelled C-A-G-L-E, at cwsglobal.org.
Got it. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there any more questions for our speakers? As a reminder, go ahead.
Just a comment, if I may. On June 2nd, 9th, and 16th, there will be a series of three forums on the refugee crisis with information from the UN, from the State Department. They are for the whole community, and they will be located at St. George's Presbyterian Church in Arlington.
Wonderful.
Good. And if you're able to send that to the info, you'll see it, info.refugeesarewelcome@gmail.com. We will add those in as wonderful upcoming events and try to work with you to promote them more fully.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any more questions for our speakers?
This is Tammy Alexander from Mennonite Central Committee. Just a quick question for Ashley. If the court does end up in a tie, that doesn't mean it's over, though, correct? That means that the case, since right now that's the injunction that's holding things up, the case would go back to the district court in Texas. Is that correct?
Right. So if the tie, it means that the injunction holds. They can go back into the state court and try to move forward, but again, the Supreme Court has upheld the preliminary injunction, so the case will move forward if the Department of Justice decides to move forward, because this is just one element of the case. But when we're thinking about timing, it's extremely unlikely that anything would be able to happen. Basically, it's going to be the end of the case, particularly if the Supreme Court has said that there actually is merit to the injunction.
Okay, thank you.
All right, so if there are no more questions, I will applaud our speakers for being concise and all-encompassing in their presentations. I want to remind people that this webinar is being recorded, and there will be a recording up on our website and circulated to those who RSVP'd, along with the slides. And we're also going to circulate the toolkit on how to have vigils and other events related to DACA DAPA in community. And the same goes for refugee welcome events as well. So I want to thank everybody for hopping on this Monday afternoon, and encourage folks, if you don't have an interfaith immigration contact already, to go ahead and contact Noel, who sent out some of the invitations. And we look forward to hearing about the good work that each of you will do in community and working together to lift up the importance of these initiatives. So enjoy the rest of your Monday, everyone.
Thank you, Hannah.
Thank you.
Thank you.